I'm not a speaker, so, and I think you'll know that by the time I get through. And he may have led me off as the first speaker so that the crowd would thin out to the point that everybody would go to the golf course. I'm not sure. We want to talk about change. Change is a necessary part of life, and I hope the few comments that I'm going to make will point that out. If you go back into the early 60s, we were growing Spanish peanut, we had bunch runner, we had early runner, and we had floor runner, and all the way through to what we're growing today, the Georgia 06G. And so we have changed, this industry's changed, and thank goodness they've changed in favorable ways, and I think you will see that as I'm talking. Back in the 60s, mid and early 60s, everybody knew that 50 to 60 pounds of seed was absolutely enough. If you get any more than that, they're going to be too close together and they'll rot. Well, the yields were like 2,200 pounds too. Fertilizer, 200 pounds a pin, and that was 5, 10, 15. That's about the only thing that was available back then. What about chemicals for disease control and herbicides? Well, we had copper sulfur dust, not spray, and we had dusted the dust field. We didn't spray peanuts back then, and we actually had DDT. DDT? How can you imagine that? How did we live so long with such deadly chemicals? They did a good job on the house fires. And there were a few others, but not many. For example, as stated this morning, Doster at one time was the largest buying point in the state. We actually bought over 14,000 tons back then. And it probably took around 6,000 acres to do that. And not only were we financing the chemicals and fertilizer, well, not the fertilizer in these figures, but the chemicals for that 6,000 acres, we were also in the cotton ginning business and the corn grain business, so we were financing corn and cotton chemicals too. Our total run bill with our chemical supplier for a year was $25,000. You can put that in the back of your pickup truck today. And then along came Benelate and Bravo. Those days changed of cheap chemicals. Our herbicides, we plowed the peanuts. And then the extension service messed that up. They came along and said, well, you're plowing off the peanut pods. So along came herbicides. So chemical bills shot up some more. As far as irrigation, we went from virtually nothing to thick-set aluminum pipe systems. And I've always made the statement that if I pulled up into a farmer's yard and I was looking for a job, if he had a trailer load of aluminum pipe under his shed, I'd just back out and keep riding. I didn't want any part of that, not even at that age. And then William Mann in Fitzgerald, Georgia, made a Widowmaker, but he called it a rainbow. And the cable tow age was on. So we went from fixed set irrigation to a cable tow, then a hard hose, pivots, and now the underground drip. The underground drip is plowed in 10 to 12 inches deep, and it's in every other mill. When I put mine in, I was real concerned about being able to germinate the seed because we're putting this underground. That water's going to go down. Well, all this time I'm thinking, well, I can't turn my land now, so I'll just chisel plow in the row and I'll break up that hard pan and we'll be in good shape. And the people helping me with the drip system said, well, you can chisel plow it if you want to, but it'll take you 2 years to get over it. That hard pan is what's going to make the water come up to the surface instead of go down. And that we actually could turn the drip on and see the water on top of the ground after a lot of cases, 4 or 5 hours. So, you know, I've had to rethink what, you know, how we used it, but I made my best peanuts on my drip, underground drip last year. And you're just simply spoon feeding that water to the peanuts where they need it, so you don't need that deep tap root. Let's talk about harvest a little bit. As a child, I remember my dad stacking peanuts on poles. And he'd put me on top of the peanuts and tell me to walk around the pole. He said I was packing the peanuts. I've often wondered if he didn't really just want me in front of those pitchforks. Back in the 60s, peanut season started in August. Ended at the end of September, 1st of November. We could hire college students, and by the time they had to go back to college around the mid-September, the rush of peanut season was over. Norman Doster thought that if he didn't have his warehouses half full by the 1st of September, he was going broke. Of course, we were buying Spanish. One year, we actually got some Spanish peanuts on the yard the last few days of July. Now, they were diseased and the leaves were coming off, but the fact is they were on the yard trying to go to a market in July. We got people now still planting them. Well, there were some changes being made. They were being made on the farm. We went from a 2-row picker to 4-row, 6-row, self-propelled. And these changes didn't stop at the farm because we all of a sudden, we were going from what we were accustomed to 12 weeks harvest to 6. And that affected every segment of the industry. So the entire industry had to change. Federal state had to grade faster. The drying had to be done quicker. Unloading had to be faster. I remember one time Norman came out and he says, we could see trailers lined up from the office all the way up top of the hill. And it going over it. And he said, well, we got to buy some more trailers next year. And I looked at him, I said, what do you want to do, have a longer line? We have no more trailers than we can dump. Built a warehouse that year. And you know, it was amazing. We had a lot more warehouses a lot more wagons the next year. So all of this has had to change in order to stay in business. So all this speeding up, unloading, speeding up, drying, we've said bye-bye to the 12-foot drying wagons and hello drying, 45-foot drying vans. And everything in between. So the drying has changed, the warehouses have gone from 3,000 tons in a lot of cases to 20,000 tons. Federal state inspection has stepped up to the test and still trying to get faster but maintain a fair value for the peanuts. And that's what the grading is all about. It's a fair value for both parties. And that's what they're attempting to do. And they've done a good job with it. up to 1977, the peanut program was pretty much status quo. And everything had always stayed the same. Well, 77 changed that. Well, all of a sudden, we went on a two-price system. And we still had to quote them based on pounds, not acres, but it was different. The growers and shellers made the necessary changes to survive and stay in business. There was no other choice. Change or go under. And speaking of that, in 1970, when we built the plant, there was 50-something local, maybe 50-something places you could call and buy a commercial load of peanuts in the southeast. That must be, 10 or 12 now at the most? So some people didn't change. Then in 2002, the program changed again. The growers and shovels agreed that a quota program, as we knew it, had to change. So for the first time, they decided to join hands, agree on what they could agree on, knowing that there were some things that they couldn't agree on. But they went to Washington together for the first time ever. As a result, they were being supported by buying points and the manufacturers. And as a result of this, we had a buyout. And there again, this is an example that there was no choice but to change. In 1970, when we started the shelling plant, we had one package. If you wanted peanuts, you got them in 125-pound bags. Well, that went along good until 77, and we started, by law, had to export peanuts. And the buyers overseas did not like 125-pound bags. So we had to go to 50 kilos, or 110.23 pounds. And then in a meeting one day, I'm sitting there, and Robert Pender, with Pender Peanut at the time, said, "We got some manufacturers that want peanuts in ton boxes." Ton boxes? How are we going to handle ton boxes in the shelling plant? Well, they got a push-pull attachment that you put on your forklift, and you can pick them up and put them on the truck and move them around. Well, how much does it cost? Oh, they're only $25,000. Holy cow. That was 10% of what we built the whole plant for. And our loan agreement at the bank plainly said, if you're going to do any capital improvement over $5,000, you have to have written permission. I thought they'd lost their mind. Well, it didn't stop at ton boxes. It went to bulk loading tote bag, bulk loading trucks, bulk loading rail car, and just kept on. And then they said, "Well, we want to put these peanuts you're exporting," and this time we were putting them in the belly of a ship. "We're going to have containers, and we're going to stack them in the containers, and they're going to roll them down the road and load them on a ship. And when they get over there, they don't have to unload them and put them back on something else. They just simply pick them up, set them on wheels, and carry them to where they're going." I thought, y'all have lost your mind. What are you going to think of next? Touch a little on quality, because quality has certainly changed over the years. In the original plant, we did not have any electric eye or color sorters. Yeah, for lack of a better word for them, because they didn't see color, they just measured light reflection. But the U.S. grade spec was not that hard to make, so it wasn't a big deal. We could meet our requirements as far as U.S. grade without them. Well, then the buyer decided, we don't have to buy on U.S. specs. We can buy on our own specs. And so they started tightening their specs. And if you could make them or couldn't make them or wouldn't make them, if you didn't make them to their specs, they bought elsewhere. Then Dr. Denon introduced a statistical quality control, SQC. And this is where you had points in the plant that you tested the product as you ran it. So you knew, before you packaged a load of peanuts, you knew whether you should be in grade or out of grade. And if you got out of grade, you made your adjustments before the whole lot was run out. So running out of grade became a thing of the past, pretty much. But it took us 10 years to learn how to operate that thing. We had to help teach us. But from that point to bar ready line peanuts, took 10 years. And I never could decide whether we were slow learners or they were just poor teachers. But finally in 1991, we got there and we could ship bar-ready peanuts. Fortunately, we were one of the first plants in the nation that could. There was two of us shipping bar-rated peanuts to manufacturers directly to their facilities. Well, this didn't just pertain to the peanuts themselves. As the specs tightened on peanuts, it also tightened on your facilities. Your plant was to be inspected. We had third-party inspection, and it was what we used was a BRC audit, and it was developed in Europe, and they're pretty tight. It took us a full year to prepare not just the plant, but ourselves and our mental attitude, I think, to pass that inspection. So we didn't even schedule the inspection for a year. It took that long to prepare for it. But now it's done every day, and you know what to expect, and you just get in there and do it. So, and it's not all bad. After all, it's not just peanuts, it's food. So the industry has stepped up to the plate and doing what they have to do to put out a good quality product. In 1980, Tom Channel and I decided that we needed to upgrade the quality of our peanuts. And I know all this is not going in the sequence because it didn't happen in sequence. But we enlarged the plant, but the main intention was to upgrade the quality. The enlarging the plant was just an added benefit. We added second gravities. We were graviting, which removes unshelled peanuts and sticks and light stuff. We were doing the same thing to them twice. And that way, if one machine got out of balance or got a little stopped up on the air intake or whatever, then the other machine would catch it and we would still have a good product. And we did both the split line and the whole nut line. Then we put in total stoning on the whole nut line. Because really, if you think about it, the stones, nut grass, glass, metal, all of that can be a tooth breaker. Or it can be a lawsuit. So we upgraded that, and then we added some wires to try to get anything we missed in any kind of defect on the peanuts or any farm material that we didn't get out in some other amount. So after doing all that in 80, even though we'd spent that money, it was 10 years later that we were actually being able to ship directly to the plant, to the manufacturing plant. And if you think about it, we estimated that we were receiving 50,000 nut grass per tractor trailer load of peanuts. And if you get that down to 100, you've done a darn good job. But not good enough. Not for bar ready. Because bar ready's goal is zero. Now zero is not possible, but close to it is. So that's what we were striving for. And to actually get to the bar ready, we had to add another plant that ran through the same type of equipment, doing the same job again, to get it to the point that we needed it. Let's talk about 1980 a bit. 1980 crop year was pretty severe. And the only reason we quit talking about 1980 was 1990. If it hadn't been for 1990, we'd still be talking about 1980 a lot. Because we had spent a lot of money upgrading the plant, and we bought about a month's supply of sherry. There was a lot more peanuts, but they were set threes. We knew we could clean them up, but it was illegal. What did we do? We imported peanuts from China, India, all over the world. Were there set threes in them? Yes, there were. And a lot of it. And a lot higher numbers than what we had in our own warehouses. The difference was it illegal to clean them up? So we cleaned up farmers' peanuts from overseas and shipped them into the edible markets, while your peanuts stayed in the warehouse and was crushed for oil. Thank goodness after that, the shelling, not the shellers, the industry as a whole got together and they finally got it to where we can shell the growers' seg 3s. If we have another 1980 or 1990, then we don't have to go outside of the nation to buy peanuts. We can make peanut butter out of a blanched peanut, which pretty much cleans up the seg 3 situation. So now it's legal to do that, but back then it wasn't. Peanuts in 1980 brought up to $1,400 a ton to the farmer. So in those kind of years, if you do have a crop, there are opportunities. And I want to close and just leave you with one word of advice. The industry is working together now, and whatever you do, stay united and be willing to change.